Thank you, Brian. I also acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we're gathered and pay my respect to elders past and present. I would like to acknowledge yourself, Brian, the Dean of the Faculty of Law, and Professor Sarah Joseph, the Director of the Caston Centre for Human Rights Law, the reasonably newly minted Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commissioner, Kristen Hilton, panellists Stan Grant and Professor Anne Arley MP, the newly elected member for the seat of Cowan, and congratulations to you, Anne. I am very pleased to open this year's Caston Centre Human Rights Conference, and Sarah indicated to me at the outset how pleased she was that we were using this opportunity to launch the government's response to the Human Rights Charter review. It'd be strange for me to do it anywhere else given the Centre's commitment to human rights, but also, and if I can just digress for 1 minute, my family's long history with the Caston family. My mum was at school with Nellie Caston, my dad was admitted to law school by Ron. Ron and Nellie were at our wedding, and I myself at Monash. Brian went to uni with Melissa, with Lindy, and with Stephen Caston. The Pakulas and the Castings go back a long way, and there's nowhere I'd rather launch this response. We do have a proud history of advancing human rights in this state and in striving to eliminate discrimination. In 2006, Victoria became the first state to legislate for the protection of human rights by introducing a Charter of Human Rights and Responsibilities, and I know that it is one of Rob Hulls' proudest achievements. Under the statute, there was an 8-year review to be conducted. We made a commitment that, unlike our predecessors, we would conduct an independent review. That was led by Mike Brett Young, the former CEO of the Law Institute of Victoria, ably assisted by Crown Counsel Melinda Richards, SC. And the review found that the Charter had been instrumental in building a human rights culture in Victoria, especially within the Victorian public sector. It's also provided a formal framework for the discussion and assessment of human rights, both within government and within the community. And the need to produce statements of compatibility for new legislation, to consider human rights in decision making when taking action, all of that has resulted in a greater awareness of human rights within the public sector and within Parliament. But Mike Brett Young's review found that progress on human rights had stalled after they had been deprioritised in recent years. And as a consequence of that, the report made 52 recommendations to strengthen human rights culture in Victoria and make the Charter more effective, more accessible and more practical. We have very carefully considered all the recommendations in that report, and it's a demonstration, I think, of how independent and how thorough the report was, that the government really has taken a long while to properly consider all of those recommendations. This was not some tick and flick job. And I'm pleased to announce that after that consideration, that 45 of the 52 recommendations will be supported in principle or supported in part. And so today I'm formally releasing the government's response to each of the recommendations, and I'll take some time to step through our key priorities. We are planning a staged implementation of the supported recommendations. We'll be introducing a suite of legislative amendments to the Charter to strengthen its operation by clarifying how it operates, by improving the mechanism for human rights scrutiny of laws, and by helping to rebuild a human rights culture in Victoria. And we will be most certainly consulting with the human rights sector as we develop that legislation. One of the key amendments that's been recommended is to Section 32 of the Charter, which currently requires laws to be interpreted so that they are compatible with human rights so far as it is possible to do so consistently with the law's purpose. The review identified that where multiple meanings of a statutory provision are available, the Charter gives no guidance about which interpretation the court should choose. So the review recommended that the meaning that is most compatible with human rights should be chosen, or if no compatible meaning is available, the meaning which is least incompatible with human rights should be chosen. And we have demonstrated and responded with in principle support for that recommendation, and we will now work on all that requires, all that is required to be done to implement that recommendation, but we are providing in principle support for that recommendation. We fully support the recommendation 29, which recommends that consistently with defining the concepts of compatibility and incompatibility with human rights, that be completely clarified, and that we clarify the definition of discrimination. And as I say, we fully support that recommendation. There are various recommendations regarding training and education, and we know, and those of you who engage with government know, that human rights training and education in the public sector is fundamental to continuing to build a human rights culture in this state. It's public sector employees, by and large, who are responsible for acting compatibly with human rights in the Charter, and as decision makers, ensuring they give proper consideration to human rights in everything they do. But in order to understand their obligations, they need to be properly trained in human rights compatibility. So I'm very pleased to announce today that the Department of Justice and Regulation will provide an additional $1.25 million this financial year to deliver human rights education and training consistent with that recommendation. Some of that funding will go to the Department's Human Rights Unit, which is the central point of information and guidance on the Charter within government. But over $630,000 of that money will go to the Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission. And I met with the Commissioner this week, and I know from that discussion just how vital and how welcome that additional funding to the Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission will be, to give them the opportunity and the ability to provide further training on human rights. That additional funding will facilitate the development of human rights resources, the delivery of training across the public sector, and the staged implementation of a number of the Charter Review's recommendations. It's also critical that human rights training and education be provided to the courts and to VCAT. And I'm pleased that the Judicial College of Victoria has taken the initiative to develop a Charter of Human Rights benchbook. I pay particular tribute to the Chief Justice, the Honourable Marilyn Warren, for whom I know this has been a priority project. That valuable resource will give helpful guidance to the public, to legal practitioners, the courts and VCAT, about how to interpret the Charter, and I think that will lead to greater and more efficient use of the Charter. Section 17 of the Charter recommends that there be included a new provision to acknowledge that every person in Victoria has the right to a name and to be registered as soon as possible after birth. And I recall very clearly when Sarah and Julie Devilljack came to my electorate office to argue for this very point. It is an issue that the Caskin Centre has highlighted as a priority for vulnerable Victorians. And again, I'm pleased to announce that the government fully supports that recommendation. We are firmly committed, as the Minister for Aboriginal Affairs has indicated on a number of occasions, to self-determination for Aboriginal Victorians. In fact, just yesterday there was a ministerial roundtable with myself, the Minister and a number of other ministers, of the leaders of many Aboriginal organisations in this state. And again, we support the recommendation for the Charter to recognise the special importance that self-determination has for Aboriginal people of Victoria as descendants of our nation's first people. That recommendation, whilst very important, will just form a part of the government's commitment to self-determination and the treaty discussions that the government has indicated it is interested in commencing with a number of representative Aboriginal groups. The government is continuing to consider a number of other recommendations, including giving individuals a clearer path to raise human rights complaints and creating a new standalone cause of action at VCAT. There are, as I said, 45 recommendations supported in part, in full or in principle, and a handful that are still under consideration, only two or three that we have not supported, but All in all, this has been an outstanding report that's been presented to government, which has been given deep consideration and which will lead to legislation in the near future, all of which will profoundly improve the application and the use of the Charter in this state. I now want to move on to a couple of other issues that I know are dear to the hearts of many people in this room. Because as well as the work that will flow from the Charter Review, the government is committed to putting equality back on the agenda in Victoria, particularly for LGBTI people. In May, the Premier delivered a formal state apology to people convicted under past prejudiced laws against homosexual acts. I was very proud to take part in that important day. That apology followed the establishment of a scheme to expunge historical homosexual convictions, and that came into effect on the 1st of September 2015. To date, there have been 7 expungements approved, and there are more applications in the pipeline. And in our first year in office, the Andrews Labor government introduced laws to remove discrimination against LGBTI Victorians by repealing the outdated and discriminatory offence of intentionally causing HIV from the Crimes Act 1958. That was long overdue for removal, and it has been removed. We have enabled same-sex couples to adopt. We have amended the Relationships Act 2008 to recognise couples who have formalised their relationships in other jurisdictions, including overseas same-sex marriage. We've appointed the first Minister in this country for Equality, Martin Foley, and Victoria's first Gender and Sexuality Commissioner, Rowena Rowan, both of whom tirelessly champion the rights of LGBTI people. Our first state budget provided $10 million for initiatives targeted at LGBTI health, wellbeing and inclusion. And in this year's budget, we provided a further $15 million for Australia's first Pride Centre. And that will bring together advisory, health and support services for LGBTI community organisations to further their work in supporting equality, diversity and inclusion across the state. We also recognise the impact of negative and damaging attitudes towards women as a key cause of gender inequality and a key cause of violence against women. And it's why we're developing Victoria's first gender equality strategy to promote women's leadership and to promote economic and civil participation in all areas of society. We've committed to implementing all 227 recommendations of the Family Violence Royal Commission, and in this year's budget we provided $572 million to begin implementing 65 of the most urgent recommendations. And as part of that $572 million, there was $23.9 million for the response of the justice system. And that meant the way that the justice system responds to family violence, but we also funded more housing and crisis refuge, more counsellors, more prevention programs, and more support for children who are the victims of family violence. And beyond that, we've supported women's reproductive health choices by amending the Public Health and Wellbeing Act. And I need to pay particular tribute to both the Minister for Health, Jill Hennessy, but also to the Upper House Member for Northern Metropolitan Region, Fiona Patten, who both championed this change. The change which establishes a 150 metre safe access zone around hospitals, around GP clinics and around health services that perform abortions. That change will enable Victorian women to access lawful medical services free from harassment and free from intimidation, and I think it is a major step forward in this state. I've also touched on the protection and promotion of cultural rights of Aboriginal people as being a key consideration for the Victorian Government. We are, as I've said, committed to promoting self-determination for Aboriginal people. Since 2010, the Traditional Owner Settlement Act has enabled Aboriginal people to achieve land justice through negotiated settlements with the state, and there are a number of negotiations on foot at the moment, including with the Tangaranga and the Goodditch Mara. But agreements under that Act are very important because they are shaped by the needs and aspirations of each individual traditional owner group, but Further work on self-determination is being progressed through the Minister for Aboriginal Affairs Regional Community Forums, and those forums are covering issues as diverse as constitutional recognition, self-determination, and as I've indicated, the possibility of a treaty. So that is very important work indeed, and I think it will lead to very different outcomes to those we've seen in the past. I just want to finish by talking about the Access to Justice Review. Last year I released the terms of reference for that review, and it's currently being undertaken by my department in consultation with Melinda Richards SC Crown Counsel and Rachel Hunter, the former Chair of Legal Aid Queensland. That review is examining ways to improve the availability of legal information and advice, to divert people from unnecessary and costly court action, and to ensure alternative dispute resolution is available to get the best value from funding for legal assistance. The results of that review are close. They will be released quite shortly, and I look forward to the release of that and improving access to justice for all Victorians as a consequence of the implementation of the recommendations that will come from that review. So look, in closing, I'm pleased to report that it has been a busy first 18 months for the government, and our planned reform work will further progress human rights in Victoria. We all know that building cultural and attitudinal change takes time, and equally we know that it can be easily reversed if the commitment to it is at any point disturbed. We have a role to play as government in leading that conversation, but we are just one part of the conversation. And so the action that we are taking to improve the human rights culture and practice in Victoria is an important building block, but the work that all of you do in your various capacities is equally important, and in many cases more important. So I look forward, Sarah, to continuing to work with the Caston Centre in the months and years to come in improving human rights and improving access to justice for all Victorians. Thank you.